The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right, I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But the QA, the SGGQA, is the important part. That stands obviously for question and answers. We break down the top tech news stories, tech and politics, gadget news, streaming news, any big news stories. It's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday. Gives us a little time to sort out the stories from the last week, or maybe some news broke over the weekend. We can dig in fresh, start our week off right. I feel anytime we start off a podcast where the live chat is discussing the finer points of pizza, thanks to some interestingly timed pizza commercials on Twitch, I feel like that's a good place to be. It's 9 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time right now, and I could totally murk a Sicilian-style pan pizza, crispy, got some olive oil in that pan, get that crust nice and crisp, get the borders, especially the edges. You know, you get to that corner piece of pizza, you've got that hard crust, like, in a 90-degree angle. I could be about that. I could be about that for breakfast right now. That would be okay by me. So, already seeing a bunch of familiar faces. Simon Says Hypno, Rico Man 17, Kappa Cash, Utaku, Gormlord. Who am I missing? Farhan! Welcome back, Farhan. And Ben Pai is Okawi. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce your name. Arthur Lee, and I think that catches us up on the people floating the chat right now. I hope everybody had a lovely weekend. I took a little me time for Saturday and Sunday, so I'm way behind. Again, I take like a weekend off, and suddenly it's like I'm a week behind on all these videos I'm supposed to make. TK Bay just jumped in with a sabajo, everyone. Thanks for jumping in, TK. Nice to see you in the chat. My wife, a friend of hers, is getting married. Spent a couple days like hanging out with the bridal party instead of having like a bachelorette party. It was more just like a fun weekend girls kind of excursion. And I'm really glad she did it, because we've been in COVID quarantine off and on strict for 2 years. It's like, we've got to relearn how to socialize and hang out with other people. So while she was doing that, it was just Lex and I, and we were like, let's do fun things. We had movie nights, and we made up a whole bunch of food. One night we did hot dogs. She also wanted, like, a really fancy beans and rice night. and I was like, wow, that is a very specific request for a six-year-old's palate. So catching back up, we've got a whole ton of news from the last week and over the weekend. And like I said, I'm kind of getting back up to speed. Usually I'm consuming this stuff like all weekend long so I can kind of prep for the show. So it's kind of funny when you've got to, like, in the moment sort of set this stuff down. At the same time, I will be putting out a video if I can find it. I don't know where I put it. Ah, here it is. A new Poco dropped. You probably saw, if you follow sort of more international tech YouTube, a bunch of videos went out on this. And because me taking a little time this weekend meant I couldn't stack a late night, for me, what would have been a late night video publish right before doing the podcast. So I prioritized the podcast, but then this afternoon, maybe early evening, there is going to be a Poco M4 video coming out. But we're going to talk about it here first. Well, when we get to the gadget block. So, I'm also seeing Barry Johnson and Gary the Fireman. Hey, what's up, Gary? Good to see you in the chat. Everybody, hello. Twin Folk Tech saying, hola, what is up? So, yes, I hope everybody is doing well. Dig it. So, we've got so much to jump into, and I would like to save that little bit of extra time as we get to the gadget block, the second half of the podcast, to chat about numerous things. So, why don't we jump in now? I've got some pretty heavy hitting. Let me move this over so I can see it a little bit better. This is what's so funny now, like with this lovely ultra wide monitor and my nicer sort of 4K graphics monitor. When I'm reaching to like the edges of the screen, it's almost like a 180 degree turn where you're getting like a profile shot on camera. Even though I've moved the monitors even closer to the camera in between them, it's a little bit of blocking, right? You got to kind of plan your movements as you're going through and trying to throw on screen share for housekeeping. So we put out I put out a bunch of videos and a couple videos that were really big. First up, I just wanted to join a part of this conversation. YouTube doesn't care if you get scammed. There are a bunch of these new sort of Telegram messaging contest or raffle scams that are hitting our comments. I want to, again, like I say in the video, I want to throw a particular shout out, thumbs up, a thank you to Gamers Nexus, where they detailed the scam. They showed all of the parts of how it works. They showed how they actually gave money to the scammer just so that they could sort of reinforce, like, this is what it looks like. Don't do this. And I also kind of want to push back against some of the comments that I've gotten on this video where there's sort of this smug acceptance of, well, people are going to get scammed. How can you even be on the internet and still fall for these things? As if YouTube doesn't pull billions of views a day with a huge age range and variety of viewers internationally, all speaking different languages. And it's I don't think it's ever a good look in our tech community to smugly smirk at people who fall for scams. I don't think it's ever helpful. I don't think it's ever... I think it's a smug superiority and a confidence in their own ignorance. And I think it makes us all look bad when people are like, just don't do dumb things. Don't get scammed. And a few of those caught me. Like, I've been pushing back subtly against some of those comments. But yeah, if someone doesn't speak this language and they get what looks like kind of an official reply from a very popular channel about a raffle or a contest and they fall for that, we shouldn't be blaming the victim. We should be continuing to sort of circle our wagons to protect more vulnerable people from getting scammed. And this is always the cycle, right? We're now really starting to chat about this in our community. It's getting a lot more visibility. Major channels are making videos about it. Smaller channels, oops, I just hit my mic. Smaller channels like mine are starting to make noise about it. And once there's a tipping point of awareness, the scammers will move on. They'll go try and find some other way of scamming people. We'll finally be rid of this one specific flavor of instant messenger and communication scamming. Then we'll have to repeat this process all over again, because like I detail in the video, even a channel my size is apparently attractive for scammers to try and rip off and to try and court people in comments on other videos, saying, you know, like, oh, I'm giving away phones. I'm going to raffle a phone on my Telegram. And you're like, I don't really use Telegram. TK Bay can definitely attest to the fact that I'm absolutely miserable when it comes to keeping up with other instant messaging platforms. So, another buyer beware. I feel it's one on us to continue sort of spreading this word, because as I say in this video, some social media platforms are better than others at helping empower the creator to inform their audience that bad things are happening. So you can maybe glean by the title of the video which social media platform was the worst at responding to a potential scam. Moving on, I did finally finish my Pixel 6a review, actually having used it for a little while, putting it through its paces, really trying to figure out who I think this phone is for. And I worked on this one in collaboration with the folks at reviews.org. So, new Pixel 6a review, low price and new features. I can't say I love the title that they picked for my video. I was talking to them, like, I really feel like we should try and do something a little clickbaitier, like, Pixel 6a, who is this even for? Just to get any kind of internet attention on this. As we know, the window of interest on the Pixel 6a is waning fast. But it's a 26-minute long video, and I feel like I've covered all the bases from sort of basic use consumers all the way up to more, you know, sort of a heavy lifting compute power kinds of conversations. And I feel like I've done what I needed to do to talk about this phone. So it's I like what I made. It's just, I do want to point out, it's the tricky bit of kind of collaborating with some of these other channels that when these videos go out, that isn't going to go on my personal channel, but it's totally public. It's ready to go if you hit reviews.org. And the mobile IQ version of the reviews.org YouTube channels, you can find it pretty easily. Or you can find it in the show notes of this week's episode, because I also put all the links in this week's show notes. So there you go. Pretty easy to find. Oh, yeah, TwinFolk. I mean, it was really tough finishing this review. TwinFolk says, Pixel 6a, I was going to do a review, but I threw it in the trash because of the 60 hertz. I mean, I'm telling you, man, every time I would look at that screen, it was all I could do to kind of hold back those sick burps and just not, like, vomit all over the phone. I mean, it really was a challenge, and I feel not enough attention has been paid to devices that cause an involuntary gag reflex when you use them for basic communication tasks. So, yeah, I mean, it's good on you, man. I mean, I feel like what you should have done, what would have been a better service to your community, TwinFolk, would have been doing, like, a slow-motion video of you trying to wing the 6A, like a frisbee, into the waste bin. So then you would have had, like, the proper review, slow-motion video of you, like, flinging it, and then we all would know, like, oh, yeah, that's what that phone is for. It's for throwing in the garbage. And then you do, like, a headache thumbnail, and what is Google thinking? Google fails again, and then you make more money on YouTube. McCorcoran, it should come with some nausea medication. Oh, Simon, that's gross. How did the Pixel 6a verps feel in the mouth? You know, it feels pretty good in the mouth. Oh, yeah. Nah, let's not do that. All right, moving right along. I had to kind of put out a long-term look back slash editorial on the Duo 2 in 2022 and just sharing some thoughts, because we haven't gotten any word on a potential Duo 3. No follow-up there. So I put together a video just like, this is where the Duo's at right now. And if you still have this idea in your head about what a Duo is like from those early first week reviews, it is a completely different product. It is the best it's ever been. I mean, I've been saying that for a while, but literally every single update has been like massive patching, massive bug fixing, huge stability improvements, just a much more fluid interaction and interface. I've completely changed my recommendation on how you should use it. My nitpicks have become like the same kinds of criticisms that I would share for just about any phone. Like, oh, this one little thing was a little off and I kind of wish it could do this. Every phone has those kinds of criticisms. And if we don't get a Duo 3 this year, I'm kind of fine just riding out the Duo 2, especially now that it's very regularly found on a decent sale. So sharing some thoughts, I feel like the next phone I need to kind of revisit would be the LG V60, again, as I prefer dual display over folding plastic screens. I feel likewise, like the best years of LG software and support have come after LG shuttered their smartphone division, which is tragic. It's just really sad. So, I had the comment up there that whole time. That was a terrible comment. Yeah. All right. Lastly, I wanted to spend just a little time on this one. I know we're talking housekeeping, and I always make housekeeping a much longer endeavor than it needs to be, but I wanted to throw just a little bit more attention. This video was so hard to finish. This is the Xiaomi 12S Ultra versus Vivo X80 Pro camera battle. Zeiss versus Leica. Brains versus brawn. I probably could have finished this video a week sooner, but every single time I would kind of go over my script and I was looking at what kind of samples I wanted to use, you know what? I found another excuse. I got to go out and shoot some more samples. Oh man, yeah, I need a better low light, you know, sample. I guess I got to go out and shoot tomorrow night. It's a long video. It's a 20-minute video, and only about 4 minutes of the middle of the video are reserved for cranky ranting about people who have terrible hot takes about night modes on phones. And again, how they've completely missed the mark on computational photography, that's bad. It's okay when regular cameras do computational photography, but computational photography on a phone, I'm an idiot. This showdown is at once one of the most exciting to talk about with radical new hardware in the mix. From the Vivo perspective, it's all about processing hardware. You're taking an amazing camera sensor, but then we're pairing it with a coprocessor, and we're combining that with some of the best image stacking and compression and HDR algorithms that I've ever seen. The flip side of that is the Xiaomi game for brute force hardware is just ridiculous. And when we talk about the advancements, when we talk about things like a 1-inch camera sensor, it really does need more explaining what is that, what does it do, what does that compare against? And it just really seems like, you know, even for me spending this much time trying to break down, because this is multiple videos, from the Vivo X70 through the Xperia Pro I into the Pixel 6 Pro, I've been trying to say, like, hey, look, if you're trying to get more out of a phone, there is a reason why you might want to spend more on one of these mega camera sensor phones. But you got to know what you're looking for. And so many tech reviews are like, well, we held up the iPhone 12 Pro and the iPhone 13 Pro, and we couldn't see any difference in the photo output looking at the different sizes of camera sensors. And you're like, you've got to be blind. You're really bad at this if you're talking about these kinds of generational improvements. That's in Apple land, where we're talking about some smaller changes, some smaller differences in sensor sizes from the iPhone 12 Pro, 12 Pro Max, and 13 Pro. They should still be tangible. You should still be able to see those differences, but they're more minor. we start talking about the differences in Android land going from half-inch sensors to one-inch sensors, this performance is incredible. And then we've got to talk about what a one-inch sensor can do that, you know, in terms of like photography and composition, not just depth of field, but this is an image sensor size that compares against super 16 millimeter film. I mean, like, that's insane. So I finally put this whole video together, and it just kind of helped reinforce, like, man, this high level camera stuff on my channel, I mean, increasingly it really doesn't make sense to try and do more of this stuff on YouTube. If I pull it up right now, because I don't want to get too into, you know, what all my channel metrics are. Let's just assume I don't really make any money on YouTube. So from the end of last week, heavy social media pushes, lots of people sharing it, and some pretty, I mean, like, very appreciated how many people were giving it a push. Giving it a retweet. I saw a couple people sharing it on Facebook, and I'm not even on Facebook. It's sitting at like 8,000 views. And I feel like this is a topic that internationally has probably got more interest than 8,000 views on a channel with 140,000 subscribers. And there's nothing else I can do. Like, there's nothing else I can analyze. What should I be doing to change? You know, the only way I could have made this video more successful is if I had replaced both of those phones with Samsungs and iPhones. Like, that's all that is going to get organic traction through YouTube. And we've got a story about, like, the YouTube Creator Academy for kids basically just warping their minds with how to appease the algorithm. But that's where we're at. So if you wanted a higher level look at what these camera phone sensors can do beyond just push shutter button and get pretty HDR colors, then I don't know what to tell you. I feel like the effort that I'm putting into that, if I just get a couple hundred views on Patreon, I feel like I'm talking more directly to people who care about this stuff and they're supporting it directly. If I really work my butt off to try and make this accessible on YouTube, it gets nothing. You know, like 8,000 views for the amount of work that video took, I'm not inclined to keep supporting that platform. So again, it's a little bit of sour grapes, you know? Like I feel like should probably be doing a little bit better than that, but there's nothing I can do. Again, I can look through, oh, well, you can see the watch time fell off a little bit sooner here, and then there was a dip in interest there, and you're like, all right, whatever. Okay, I guess. But it doesn't encourage me to make different kinds of videos. It just says, like, well, I need to go to where people say they actually appreciate those kinds of videos. I need to backtrack here real quick, because one Mr. Andrew Wallace, a Mr. Fat Produce, just gifted a tier one sub to Jman150 and to Gormlord. So thank you very much, buddy. I very much appreciate the support, keeping the stream healthy, keeping it active again, where on Twitch as a money-making endeavor with a better collection of people more interested and engaged in this topic for the conversations that I like to tell. It's always a huge help supporting the channel and keeping stuff going. So thank you very much. I appreciate that, Andrew. So, I'm sorry, I'm way behind on the chat here. Some folks talking about the LG G8. I still need to pull my LG G8 out. The T-Mobile variant of the LG G8, I don't believe, has gotten sort of up to date with Android operating system updates. Yeah, Kappa Cash, it was dangerous, man. That's what happens when you have two fun devices to play with. You just can't stop. I mean, like, God, I know I'm running a tech channel here, but I just, like, I want to stop talking about these things and just use them. Like, if you could just follow me around with, like, a cheesy, like, vlogging camera, and I'll just tell you everything that I want to tell you about it. But I'm not going to sit here and make all this fancy B-roll and stuff and try and produce the video. You would get, it would be nonstop. I could do, you know, 12-hour daily streams and just be like, oh, check this out. I'm doing this thing. It's so much fun. Let's try and figure out how it works. Ah, that'd be fun. And just a whole channel. Just run it
from when I wake up till dinner time, and that would be great. Yeah, Farhan, even I can see the massive difference in terms of photo processing between the 11 Pro and the 10S, and I'm not an Apple guy. And from the 12 to the 13, that got even bigger because of, like, legit sensor size changes. I was sitting in on a... what, it was right before the iPhone 13 launch, or was it right after? And I remember a popular YouTuber who's known for just buying the most expensive things, and that's kind of all this tech commentary really is. Someone would, like, hit him up point blank on a Twitter Hangout Spaces, whatever Twitter calls their Hangouts clone. And he was like, well, I mean, it's because of the iPhone processing. Yeah, I mean, the sensor size difference doesn't mean anything. It's because, like, Apple processes their photos the same. So, I mean, the performance on the 12 Pro is going to be the same as the 12 Pro Max. Like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Yeah, Aditya, I was kind of disappointed. What? Only 8,000 on a video? That comprehensive? Like, I'm not trying to say that my video deserves millions of views. I'm just saying, I think there's an interest in talking about revolutionary smartphone camera tech from the perspective of a North American who doesn't get these things directly. Like, we've got to import these phones. And just letting the rest of the United States know how far we're falling behind the rest of the world. But that doesn't make for as fun a commentary, I guess. I guess, especially people in North America, where I only get about 25% of my viewership out of North America, they don't like hearing that they're not on the bleeding edge. They want to be told that they're exceptional. And boy, man, when you pick up some of these camera sensors and some of these, like, really bleeding edge examples of pocket computers, we're not it. Oh, see, that was my problem. You got to do the shock face, show some skin in the thumbnail, and use the sacred SEO words Apple and Samsung and make the video compatible to the modern day declining concentration spans. If I could just sum up that video in 2 minutes, and I could have turned it into a short. There you go. Yeah, it's not great. Geet Madden, out of curiosity, how did your Galaxy Note video perform compared to the effort? All right, so I had to tag team the S22 and the Note 22 at the same time. I had to shoot really heavy for the camera stuff. I really dropped the ball on the S22. I did not shoot heavy on that phone because I was so focused on the Note 22. But let me see, S22 Ultra... So yeah, I mean, I feel like my commentary on the Note 22 being by the time the Note 22 videos had launched, I think I was 2 weeks out. So already, like, well into the decline on the Note, and that's sitting heavy at 25. Like, that still gets regular traffic. My Vivo versus Xiaomi video is essentially dead. Like, as far as YouTube's concerned, it's not getting any Second Life or re-recommendation or anything like that. So yeah, the Note 22 is consistently getting, I mean, not in my top tier of traffic, but it's consistently getting views. The S22 video is basically done at 11,000. But I did do two videos technically on the S22. So between those two videos, I'm sitting at around 20,000 views. But I would imagine that the same 10,000 people that saw my S22 A Phone to Skip video are likely also the same people who saw my S22 Getting Run Over by the Hype Train video. I'm sure there's a significant Venn diagram overlap there. But yeah, my Note 22 review doing real well. So, again, a comparison between the top options from Vivo, one of the world's largest smartphone manufacturers, regularly outpacing Samsung in markets throughout Asia, and Xiaomi, one of the world's largest smartphone manufacturers, regularly outpacing Samsung in markets throughout Asia. Those two phone brands combined in one video, 8,000 views, video's dead. So yeah, again, I know I'm being cranky and I'm kind of preaching to the choir here because a number of you are on the Patreon, but when you see fewer of these like deep dive kinds of analysis videos on my channel, that's why. Again, the only reason those videos can be made is because I've got a crew of people over on the Patreon that are directly supporting them. So not to be like, this, you know, brought to you by CuriosityShare and Nebula, and come see my ad-free videos. Like, that's why. That's why. This entire market that we've created where we know there's an audience, you can't tell me only 8,000 people are interested in a showdown between the 12S Ultra and the Vivo X80 Pro and only want to hear people talk about, well, we put the two phones like side by side in one clamp and then we shot three photos in HDR. Like, that's not... I'm just saying, I feel like that those numbers are maybe a little off. Hold on, I'm like way behind on the chat here, so let me catch this up, and then we got to knock out the news block. Yeah, Barry Johnson, I was just over 2 weeks out. So from the launch of the Note 22 at peak interest, my video came out a little over 2 weeks after that, and then. So I started with the S22. So the S22 was almost exactly 2 weeks out. You're right. The Note 22 was closer to 3 weeks out. 3 weeks after the launch of the Note 22, after everyone had said that Samsung was the latest and greatest, I still am doing much better numbers on the Note 22. So yeah, again, the game is rigged. if all you want to talk about is Samsung and Apple, then you too can have a successful tech commentary career on YouTube. Yeah, see, Dr. Ian, I mean, it's that kind of stuff. My interview videos get shitty traffic, but I love doing them, so I'll keep doing them until they get an audience. And so, Dr. Ian, Tech Potato, everyone who is here, I'm sure you're likely subscribed to Tech Potato, and you should be. I feel like this is one of the massive and the marked shifts from where we were when I started doing YouTube. That kind of like hustle it, grind it, you know, you'll eventually kind of find an audience and grow, has been completely usurped by audience manipulation algorithms that keep you from your subscribers. So first and foremost, the 140,000 people that say they are at least passively interested in watching my videos are basically kept from my videos by YouTube. YouTube acts as a gatekeeper. And then from there, the search and discovery tools work against you unless you find some kind of lightning rod of popularity. That means you're twofold. The platform has two active tools against organically building an audience unless you're only playing the game of how do you make the most popular videos for YouTube's trending topics. And that's what's so frustrating. So it's like we've got to do all of this legwork to circumvent this algorithmic sorting of information and bring people to our videos, like dragging them individually sometimes just to check this stuff out. And, you know, we can try and create other methods of social media and distribution. And I've got a subreddit that we'll be plugging later on in the show. But it's not the same as like when I first started, it really did feel like the major growth of my channel occurred over a window of time before I was on Pocket Now. Like I was almost paying rent just on my YouTube audience of around 20,000 subscribers. And I make significantly less money with 140,000 subscribers than I used to with 20,000 subscribers. My view rates haven't changed substantially. So the videos that hit really hard when I had 20,000 subscribers, I'm probably making way less traffic on similar and way better produced. Because I mean, like, if you go back to before I was on Pocket Now, my video production quality was pretty crap. It was really bad. So yeah, it's pretty rough. And again, we can keep complaining about it, but this is also like, we're all here on Twitch, you know, like the conversation is trying to, I'm trying to sort of spread that conversation on another massive corporate platform. But again, I feel like this has at least given me better tools and interaction and capabilities to host the kinds of conversations that I want to have. Why don't we knock out this news block? Everything we're going to be talking about is going to be on the show notes, somegadgetguy.com, this week's blog post, this week's entry. And we've got a couple follow-up stories. So I want to start with a pair of stories on the FCC, one from the Wall Street Journal, one from Ars Technica, and they kind of staple. Real quick, before I do that, Geet Madden, would you ever consider joining something like Nebula or Floatplane? Neither of them want me. So I pitched a series on advanced smartphone use to Nebula, and they didn't even reply. They didn't even say like, oh, well, that would be interesting. That's not really what we're looking for right now. We're happy with the smartphone reviewers that are currently on our platform. Thanks for your submission. Like, even knowing a few of the people that are kind of close to the workings of Nebula didn't even get a response. So I gave up on Nebula, and again, I'm fine. If you want good content, ad-free, the highest 4K stream that I can create, that's where my Patreon goes. And that's a bummer that we've got to sort of compartmentalize that, because I really, really would have loved to have been in the mix on a platform kind of trying to promote that same idea. Floatplane did get back to me, but it was a very formulaic, oh, we're very critical on the creators that we're bringing on, and you know, we'll be looking to expand this service. And obviously none of that's really happened. Floatplane has stayed very marginal in that. So again, it's really, can I make good content for a platform? I mean, if I'm going to expend all this effort to create, you know, standalone content for Nebula, I have to be able to pay for my time to make that content. Where if I put that same amount of effort into just kind of keeping up my own Patreon, it's a much better return for my time. But I did. I reached out to both, and both were like, nah. So that's fine. Cool. All right. Let me get this out of the way here. And first up, from the Wall Street Journal, faster internet is coming to America as soon as the government knows where to build it. The $42 billion broadband plan is slowed by a lack of accurate maps showing gaps in service. Now, I'm bringing this one back up because I feel like the Wall Street Journal published this. This is a pretty good look. The government is going to be spending $40 billion on infrastructure, and a significant chunk of this is going towards underserved, more rural populations, bringing people up to speed on broadband. I've been talking about this since the beginning of the Trump administration after Ajit Pai became the chair of the FCC, and now people are starting to act like, oh, well, what shocking news. I've seen follow-up, you know, people sort of reporting on the Wall Street Journal's report of this, like, well, how do we fix this? And we've been talking about this for the last 5 years. The FCC's current ability to grade broadband distribution is woefully inadequate. It does not explain where there are gaps in service. It uses very faulty metrics to say, like, hey, if this one house on this one street has access to a cable termination that you could plug a modem into, they rate the entire city block as having access to broadband. We do not know what the digital divide really is in the United States. And we've been complaining about it for a long time now. But now, as part of a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, there's $40 billion on the line. $40 billion. Now, if we know anything about telecom, ISP, broadband lobbyists, something tells me they're going to get a significant chunk of that $40 billion, and they won't do anything to really improve the service. They won't do much to really expand the access for all of these other communities that are underserved. And then they'll just come back to this kind of story and say, like, well, we just didn't know where we were supposed to lay the cable. We didn't know where we were supposed to roll the fiber. We couldn't figure out where the copper lines needed to go for the DSL. The FCC coverage map was just not good enough. We could have asked people in their communities to also do like some little surveys. We just got $40 billion. We could afford some surveys, but we just, our hands are tied. We're multi-billion dollar conglomerate, you know, mega corporations that control all of the consumer access to this infrastructure. And we know exactly where all the pipelines are. And we've also been lobbying these local governments to restrict access and competition. So we know where the telephone pole access is and where the underground access is and where all the nodes are. But we just couldn't figure it out. What could we do? What happened? What happened? And that's what's going to happen. That was a play, a one-man show by Juan Carlos Bagnell, Broadband in You, How to Throw Away $40 Billion of Taxpayers' Money.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Yeah, it's all going to be about monopolizing the current infrastructure. I mean, it's really sad. The follow-up to this, if we're going to pick on any ISP in this, I mean, it is still a little refreshing that we're seeing one move from the Ajit Pai FCC face the minorest scrutiny. But it is just kind of hilarious. Like, this is probably one of the bigger, more visible players in a disruptive space. They just don't have the lobbying power to push this through. So this is by way of Ars Technica. Again, John Brodkin doing amazing work over at Ars. FCC cancels Starlink's $886 million grant from Ajit Pai's mismanaged auction. FCC, nascent Starlink tech has capacity limits, may not deliver required speed. So back in 2020, from the article, Starlink was tentatively awarded the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund grant in December of 2020, but the satellite provider still needed FCC approval of a long-form application to receive the money, which is intended for areas with little or no high-speed broadband access. So the FCC seriously doubts that Starlink can deliver what they claim they can deliver. They doubt that they have the infrastructure to roll out and that they can support all of the speeds for these more rural living citizens, these more rural individuals. And they're citing that, like, a lot of this money is kind of going up in a very expensive sort of distribution platform where someone has to pay for these $600 satellite dishes that the consumers will use. So if you've got $800 million in this kind of infrastructure spending, where does that $800 million go? Can you actually deliver the service that you claim to? And then we're still sort of on the hook. Either consumers or the government will have to subsidize those satellite dishes. So it's just kind of funny to me. $40 billion is about to get dumped into the coffers of broadband providers across the United States, ISPs around the United States. And $800 million, that was a separate fund just to try and connect people living way out in rural areas, that's getting the scrutiny. Again, I'm so disappointed, and I've sent some follow-up emails, and every single time I send an email to the FCC, it's like, oh, well, we've considered this matter concluded, but it's like I'm still going to keep sending them. I might invest in a fax machine just to keep faxing documents to the FCC. But we talked a little while back about expanding the definition of broadband. So instead of 20 megabit down, 5 megabit up, whatever it is. It's pretty slow. It's something like that. They want to increase it to 100 down and 20 up. And that's basically just a love letter to cable, because cable broadband can't support very fast upload speeds. It's all about a consumption of media download speed. And I wrote out a letter. Actually, I still have it here, but, you know, like highlighting a part of it. When we talk about the digital divide, tech geeks like me increasingly have to speak for people who should be able to speak for themselves. We're losing the stories and cultural diversity of our country at a time where we desperately need more understanding and empathy. If we continue on a path where consuming misinformation is significantly, literally 5 times easier than uploading better information, we can't create an environment where good ideas beat bad ideas. The deck is rigged. And so I've been continuing to kind of push. I'm going to start sending that letter to my elected officials, especially the local California State Assembly, because we have some massive problems with broadband distribution, even in more affluent areas. You know, any kind of competition in the state is extremely difficult. So, Farhan, no worries, Juan. Faxing is still a thing in 2022. I'm talking about the FCC. Have you been to the FCC website? I guarantee you, faxing is still a thing at the FCC. I'm going to get a fax number, and I'm going to send so many faxes. But, you know, I really want people like that to sink in a very literal way. It is 5 times easier on cable to download misinformation than it is to upload better information. So I am kind of bummed, because I think there's some merit in Starlink's technology that could help broadband distribution, but I also don't have the highest opinion of what Starlink is trying to achieve in this moment. And it's all wrapped up in all of the political and social media shenanigans of a figurehead like Elon Musk. But every single time we start acting like he's this great, savvy businessman, we look at his companies and they rely so heavily on taxpayer investment. And then Elon Musk as a figurehead does a huge disservice to all of the people working in his companies by being such a schmuck about, oh, paying taxes. Yeah. Where do you think the $1 billion came from that was going to fund this rural broadband initiative? Your company can't survive without direct grants and funding from the government. And that's been true of Tesla. That's true of SpaceX. That's been true of Starlink. When he sent all of those satellites and modems out to Ukraine, I almost said the Ukraine. I'm from the United States. It's not a reflection on my opinion on Ukraine's sovereignty. It's just a bad, lazy habit of a North American. When he sent all of those satellite dishes to Ukraine, the federal government picked up the bill on that. That wasn't a charitable donation. They were paid for. They were paid for in taxpayer funds. We paid. And I'm happy for my taxes to support data distribution in a war-torn area. That's great. But they got the headlines like they were doing this grand charitable act. And that's not okay. You shouldn't get the benefit of doing something nice for a country in turmoil and patting yourselves on the back for charity when it was kind of just another taxpayer-funded initiative from a company that seems to need all those tax dollars and has a figurehead CEO who is trying to move his companies and organizations around to play shell games so they don't have to pay their taxes. That's not okay. So, oh, McCorcoran, I haven't heard anything terrible about that, though. I have to look it up. McCorcoran says that apparently the Starlink speeds have been dreadful lately. The last follow-up that we did on reviews.org was shortly before the satellite dishes had been sent to Ukraine. And as far as I knew, they were still doing pretty well. The Constellation had suffered some fallout. They sent up a whole bunch of satellites, and a bunch of them like almost immediately came crashing back down to Earth. Wasn't a great look for a company that says, hey, we can put things in orbit. But as far as I'd known, there hadn't been any significant disruption to service. So I'll look into that. I would definitely appreciate that. Yes, FCC news to keep an eye on. I will be pleasantly shocked if this $40 billion in infrastructure for digital distribution actually does manage to help some people out. Because at this point, I am now incredibly cynical and skeptical about how these companies can just keep taking money from taxpayers and not really make anything better. Moving right along, in another Let's Subvert Justice story, this is another one coming from Ars Technica, some back-to-back Ars Technica goodness for you. Samsung Air pardoned due to South Korean economic needs. Lee's ascendancy to Samsung chairman position key to, quote, vitalizing the economy. This is written up by Kevin Purdy over at Ars Technica. This write-up is brief, but I need you to see how many links follow through all of this news about the heir apparent to Samsung. from the first paragraph of the article, Samsung Electronics Vice Chair J.Y. Lee received a presidential pardon Friday for his role in a 2016 political scandal, a move the South Korean government says is necessary so the country's largest cabal, I've never known how to pronounce that word, can help steady the national economy. Quote, in a bid to overcome the economic crisis by vitalizing the economy, Samsung Electronics Vice Chairman Lee J. Young will be reinstated. Lee, 54, was arrested in February 2017 on charges that he was complicit in Samsung paying millions in bribes to various organizations tied to a presidential advisor. The bribes were intended to win favor for an $8 billion proposed merger of two Samsung Group units. Lee was convicted of perjury, embezzlement, hiding assets outside the country, and being one of five Samsung executives who paid $6.4 million in bribes to ex-South Korean President Park Geun-hye. The swift trial and fall from grace didn't last long. Lee's sentence was halved at an appeal hearing in February, and key bribery and embezzlement charges were suspended, allowing him to leave prison after just 6 months. So yeah, the future chairman of Samsung Electronics is out, is probably free to conduct business again. It's a crazy story hearing how Samsung is sort of run like a family business. And when I say family, I mean family like Goodfellas. And that's how this entire organization is run in South Korea, and where Samsung has sort of above the law privileges when their executives are caught directly manipulating elected officials. And that's bad. That's really not great. Yeah, Gormlord, how nice to be rich and never have to face consequences. Yeah, Twin Folk, the future chairman of Samsung is a legit criminal, and in like a very organized crime kind of way. So not great. Not great at all. I talked about this when he was brought up on charges. No, we talked about this during that appeal process. That's what it was. I remember talking about, like, yeah, of course. But at least because of this way, and he got pardoned on this, and he was sort of released from prison, but he shouldn't be able to run a massive tech conglomerate like Samsung anymore. It would seem that now the South Korean government is sort of removing the last few barriers to him being allowed to operate as the head of Samsung. So basically he's just kind of coming back to the same sort of power that he was sort of intended to have. Not great. Not great at all. Again, we can say, like, oh, what does this mean for Samsung? We would need to assume that he was born of something different to how Samsung was managed if we expect that his ascendancy to the role of chairman at Samsung will cause changes, right? That was a very complicated way of saying, I think he's a product of his environment. I don't think he's unique. So how he runs Samsung is probably informed by the people around him already running Samsung. So if we're worried about significant changes coming to Samsung, I don't think we should be concerned. If we're concerned about the current trajectory of Samsung, then yes, we should be concerned, because I think he's going to be more of the same in how Samsung is currently operating. So, again, not great. Twin Folk. Oh, he has affluenza. Yes, yes, absolutely. A really bad case of affluenza. I wanted to bring this up because I went on that tangent rant. I went on that trant about YouTube, my own video. So this is a story from Engadget. Do I have my screen? Yeah, my screen was kind of off there. Hitting the books, what goes on at a summer camp for YouTube gaming kidfluencers? This is written up by A. Tarantola. I don't know who A. Tarantola is. I'm going to have to look him up. In the first days of social media, to build a personal brand online, you mostly just needed a basic working knowledge of HTML. In 2022, however, the influencer marketing industry's reach is estimated at around 16.4 billion. This is an excerpt below from her new book, Examining the Culture and Business of Online Influencing, Break the Internet. Olivia Yallop enrolls in a summer gaming influencer camp for teens. So this is not grown-ups at a workshop for how to make better social media content. This is for teens. This is a workshop for kids. I was a part of the YouTube space back when it was operating here in Southern California, and there were very strict rules about like what your channel size could be. You had to be of legal age, like you had to be over 18, and then the liability, the camera rentals, the lighting equipment, the sound equipment. I think you couldn't run an entire space on your own and rent out the space unless you were like 21. But again, very strict rules on like what channel size and how old you needed to be able to sign the contracts and rent the equipment and stuff. I just want to scroll down because there's this passage of the book that they're describing. She's in there and she's taking all these notes and she's having to like rapidly look up all these acronyms and all of these terms and like search and metrics and algorithm and all this stuff. And someone presents the question like, well, how do you make good content for YouTube? And it basically explodes into a debate on how to appease the algorithm. And we're talking about kids who are savvier than current like PR and marketing heads talking about granular, metric-driven, algorithmically sorted content, but no one can answer the question, how do you make a good video? It's all about how do you monetize, at what size can your channel monetize, what kind of keywording, what kind of thumbnails, what kind of production quality, and none of it has to do with content quality. Like, it does not matter what the topic is, what the research is, it's only digging into what I was talking about, crying about my own personal video here. Hold on one second. And Aditya, yes, we are exploiting and monetizing our children. Looking at my notes, I realized Nathan's original question, what makes a good video, has become something else entirely. What does YouTube consider to be a good video and thus reward accordingly? It's a small elision, admittedly, but significant. Good is whatever YouTube thinks is good, and interpretations outside this algorithmic value system aren't entertained. His prompt about creative possibilities has been heard as a question about optimizing the potential of a commodity in an online marketplace. It's all about value, he continues, unwittingly echoing my thoughts. What value does your video bring to the YouTube community? How are you going to stand out from all the other people doing it? And this cuts to the heart of criticism against influencer training courses like this one and others which have sprung up in LA, Singapore, and Paris in recent years, that it's ethically inappropriate to coach young people to commodify themselves, that it's encouraging children to spend more time online, that it's corrupting childhoods. Influencers and industry professionals rolled their eyes or responded with a mixture of horror and intrigue when I'd mentioned the Fire Tech program in passing. That's disgusting, said one agent. Way too young. Privately, I thought this was an inconsistent position given she represented a mumfluencer with a family of four. I respect it, said a Brighton-based beauty guru, but I would never personally make that choice for my kids. Crazy times we live in, offered an NYC-based fashion influencer before admitting, for real though, I kind of wish I had that when I was younger. So, pretty gross. Not great. Farhan, it's all about value every Sam Apple night on YouTube. Yeah, it's pretty gross. Oh, man. It's really rough. So, again, keep your kids away from social media until they're forming peer groups for their own communication needs. Like, God, it's everything I can do because Lex definitely sees what I do for a living. And she'll pick up a phone and she'll make her own little vlogs. But we've got these amazing videos stored locally. They've never been uploaded in any online capacity. I got to show her, sort of into the second month of the lockdowns, she took one of my mirrorless cameras and figured out like how to record video while the lens was pointing at herself. And we've got this incredible movie of a four-year-old talking to herself in the future. She made the video for herself. Again, I didn't prompt any of this, but she made the video for herself talking about how she was staying safe and what she was going to do and how we were going to be okay. And you're going to watch this in the video and it's going to be fine. You're going to watch this in the future and it's going to be fine. And it's brilliant. It's amazing. It's out of focus. The sound is terrible. She's constantly like rubbing on the microphones and the body of the camera. And here is a four-year-old creating a piece of media for herself to be watched again in the future. It's impossible for me to not watch it and get choked up. So creation and storytelling and creativity and sharing and expression, these things are vital. And they all run counter to algorithms. The algorithm doesn't care. The algorithm only prioritizes watch time on site to feed more ads. And they don't seem particularly interested in sharing the revenue split very fairly. So anything we can do, to sort of inform, your voice is more powerful and is worth more than what a social media platform will throw some change your way if one of your videos gets popular, is absolutely vital. The kids in your circles of family, the children that you might be raising or you might have access to, it is critically more important for them to learn that your voice is valuable and powerful than your voice can be commoditized to sell, affiliate links on social media platforms. Yeah, Simon says Hypno. Hey, guys, don't forget this crazy, exciting pump and dump scheme, guys. It's crypto. So cool. Although, I actually wouldn't mind picking up a VPN sponsorship these days. I feel like that's on brand for me. I use Surfshark. This podcast not brought to you by Surfshark. Lastly, for the news block, I just, again, I don't want to get my hopes up, but, my hopes have been dashed on the rocks numerous times. But the only thing that seems to move our industry is competition. We just talked about, ISPs and traditional broadband. They can't figure out how many people are underserved, and we're about to give them $40 billion. Directly from the Google Fiber blog. We don't get a lot of news from the Google Fiber blog, but apparently they're ramping up a whole series of new markets: Arizona, Colorado, Nebraska, Nevada, and Idaho. So there's going to be some more Google Fiber getting set up and spread out, and that would be good. I'd be okay with that. Again, I was just making fun of YouTube. I kind of feel like some of the Google services market, I'm a big fan of the Google hardware team. I'd really love to see what a Google data and infrastructure team could make of some, some expansion on fiber rollout. I really like Google Fi. Alphabet as a corporation, as a mega conglomerate amoeba sucking up all of these other little players and whatever they interact with, some of these individual divisions can still do some really exciting and disruptive stuff. So if Google Fiber can break out in a few more of these markets, especially because like, and I see like Colorado and Arizona, and I'm like, man, we just need to sort out some of the ridiculous bureaucracy around telephone pole access here in California, and then we could do that too. I want that so bad. It wouldn't take much. And again, we've been flirting with this, do consumers even need fiber? And now we're doing this work from home stuff. So just to keep an eye out, maybe kind of poke around or put your email back into the notification on Google Fiber if it's coming to your area. That would be nice. It would be nice to have a bit more competition. And then maybe if they can get a little of that broadband distribution cash, we could really shake up a few of these markets. Farhan, I have not heard of Google Fiber in ages. The last plan, I think, from Google Fiber was more to manage what was already existing. So they were like, if there was like a little small sort of community backhaul, like dark fiber that was there, they would try and go in and manage it. But even that still ran into a whole bunch of bureaucracy and local laws against competition and stuff like that. So, you know. What ER1980 has breaking news? It's official. Android 13 is live and showing on my Pixel 6 Pro. I'm going to, in real time, open up... system, not about phone. System update. Check for update. Checking for update. My system is up to date. I do not have the Android 13 on my Pixel 6 Pro. So I'm nope. I tried again. One more time. Nope. System is up to date. So it's probably rolling out in stages or in batches. I don't know. So we'll see. Hopefully it lands soon. Real quick, I do want to just throw a quick shout out to the subreddit. I did very well on the subreddit this week. Actually, the video that I wasn't expecting to do better on the subreddit this week did very well on the subreddit this week. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you will see a very different community of online tech conversation than what is fed to you through the YouTube algorithm. Actually, if there is a sponsor for this week's episode, it is Anti-YouTube Algorithm. This video brought to you by not getting all of your videos fed to you through the YouTube sorting algorithm. But they're not paying me money for that. A number one with a bullet, YouTube doesn't care if you get scammed. I'm so bitter this week. It's hilarious. No, I mean, this is a really funny sort of, oh, I'm an old person ranting against social media kind of episode this week. But number two, coming by way of Ryan Thomas, 120Hz smartphone displays, unnecessary. Parenthetical, controversial. I like that he's telling you that this video is a controversial topic. So you get an up arrow for that one, Ryan. And then number three, no Surface Duo 3 in 2022. I'm okay sticking with the Duo 2 from that punchable face guy, some gadget guy. Number four, Sony Xperia Pro I and Sony Xperia Pro 5G. Amazing new features tested with Sony A7IV from one Mr. TK Bay coming in fourth. And rounding out the top five, we've got Easy Computer Solutions, LG V60 on Android 12. This camera update is insane. He's really been carrying a torch for the LG V60. And while I have absolutely been a fan of the V60, and I just haven't been able to spend as much time with Android 12 as I would have, Eric over at Easy Computer Solutions has basically been detailing every single update coming by way of LG. Again, like I said, it's just sad that the best years of software and support for LG phones came after LG closed their smartphone division. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is a broad community. I know I'm always talking about the videos that took the top spots over the week, but there were numerous videos shared that didn't get as much love. They did not get as much attention. They didn't get the upvotes, but we still saw someone made an effort to share that video on the subreddit, and they felt that was a video that deserved more attention. Pixel 6a commentary. Farther on down the list, kind of closing out the top 10, was my camera comparison, Xiaomi versus Vivo. We've got Grounded Tech talking about the Nothing phone. We've got a really interesting from Jabber Tech talking about travel routers, like a travel personal Wi-Fi solution. ETA Prime, taking a look at the new Lenovo Legion Y700. We got Tech Valor talking about the face unblurring feature. And we also have Tech Potato investing in America's semiconductor future. What's next? And I definitely have to give that one an upvote for one Dr. Ian. Again, I've learned so much about CPU, GPU design from his work and from the interviews that he's been conducting, and especially from some of his analysis when we get these new product announcements. Everything that I've kind of built my 8 Plus Gen 1 coverage on came from his early assessment and his early testing on the 8 Plus Gen 1. Credit where credit's due. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and you will find a new channel that you love, that you never would have been served to you through YouTube. This is a labor of love. It's a passion project of mine. It needs all the help and all the support. It needs all the upvotes and comments and sharing. If you would like a better, broader kind of tech commentary, this is one of the places where you can find it. So definitely appreciate it. All right. McCorcoran, Easy has kind of become a hub to discuss the updates for LG devices and their continued use case in 2022. My favorite is like, He loves to sneak in the LG Velvet on modern camera comparisons. Like, hey, you're going to look at this photo from an iPhone. You're going to look at this photo from a Galaxy. And now here's a two-year-old LG mid-ranger. What photo do you like the best? And often the Velvet is in the mix. It's not like a foregone conclusion that the $1,200 phone takes the win. I love setups like that because it immediately picks apart that kind of brand fandom, that brand loyalty, the sort of, I've got blinders on and I just want to know that my favorite brand won. How am I supposed to vote on which photo looks the best if you don't tell me which photo was the Samsung? Because then I can't have an opinion on it. Easy loves picking apart that kind of stuff. It's kind of funny. All right, we do have, I mean, it's just, it's not even really like a gadget block story. It's more just, again, so last week was Unpacked. TK and I really struggled to talk about Samsung Unpacked. If you go to the Best of Our Week, that was a show that we streamed Thursday night. It's the day after Samsung Unpacked. And every single time we started talking about Unpacked, we would get distracted and start talking about something else. Yeah, they said that this and the, for this watch. But did you talk about the new, like, Qualcomm? And what about the new battery? And do you think we're going to get something from Mobvoi? Oh, right. Sorry, Galaxy Watch. But what about these new earbuds? Oh my gosh, have you tried the Freebirds? But then I was also using these other ones, and I've got the Snapdragon Sound earbuds over here. Right. We were supposed to be talking about the Galaxy Buds. And one of the things that got us sidetracked bad, while we were talking about the announcement of the Z Fold 4, someone kind of mentioned it in the chat, and I knew I was going to talk about it, but I ended up front-loading the new Xiaomi. The Xiaomi Mix Fold 2 has also been officially unveiled. I'm linking here to the Engadget article, not just the press photos. But we've got a foldy-bendy plastic screen that is coming in roughly the same thickness as a Surface Duo. And that has me very critically interested for a new manufacturing process, a new design, and sort of a radical thinness with a different hinge than what Samsung is doing for the Z Fold 4. Now, hold on one second, I'm going to get a drink of water here.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Are you in the market for a new pair of headphones, Bluetooth speaker, or some true wireless earbuds? Then you've come to the right place. I'm here to help you make better audio purchasing decisions. From budget brands like Empow, Taltronics, to more well-known brands like Sony, Sennheiser, and AKG, I'm reviewing them all, including Soundcore and one more. My name is Jeff, also known as El Jefe Reviews all over the internet, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And I make tech reviews of audio products from a regular person's perspective. I answer the questions so you know what to buy, what works, and what doesn't. So before you make that purchase decision, make sure you check out one of my full reviews, and that way you get all the info you need to make a better decision with your money.
So McCorkran, what I think is funny, so Michael writes, even some of the Samsung loyalists have to grudgingly admit that Xiaomi is just such a better design, at least from what we can see. What I've loved are all the people like, Xiaomi is releasing their own Fold clone. They're like, whoa, is this not a clone of the Fold? Excuse me. Like, the only thing that, I mean, the sort of folding aspect, screen on the outside and a squarish tablet screen on the inside is sort of similar. But then, like, you might as well call the Fold a Royale FlexPi clone. Because, oh, they had the first folding and it folded and you had a square screen. The Xiaomi Mix Fold 2 is an evolution on the same style of folding concept from Samsung. It's not a clone. This is what is so reductive about the way that we front-load Samsung coverage. It's not to say that the Fold isn't a well-polished idea of a mini-folding tablet. It's that that idea is not done. We look at the traditional slate phone, there's not a lot you can do to the form factor of a traditional slate phone. It's going to have a flat screen or it's going to have a curved screen. It's going to have flat sides or it's going to have curved sides. It's going to have a flat back or it's going to have curved glass. It's going to have a flush camera sensor or it's going to have a camera bulge. Like, there aren't a lot of permutations there. We've sort of agreed on what a slate regular consumer phone generally looks like. Taller aspect ratio, more screen to body percentages, but we're pretty much there. It's a mature consumer experience. Folding phones are the Wild West. There is no consensus, and there should be no decided upon form factor. So if the Mix Fold 2 were just another Fold clone, it would be similar thickness, similar design, similar screen. It's a Samsung bending AMOLED. So we know they got the screen from Samsung, but it would have kind of the same trench of a crease cutting through the middle. None of that is on display here. They are taking all of the things that made the Z Fold sort of a weak experience, and they are improving on it. I'm telling you, if you get a chance to play with something like a Duo, and you can appreciate context and nuance, you will understand, oh, this thing is so radically thin that when I've got it all closed up, it does not feel like such an extreme lump in my pocket, almost twice the thickness of a traditional phone before I put a case on it. So there is a substantial amount of value in thinner panels, which is one of the major aspects on this Mix Fold 2 design. Now, I thought I could toggle through. Ah, here are the pictures. This is a little bit better. Let me see if I can kind of move this up so you can see that easier. Yeah, that's better. So the Mix Fold 2, the 5.4 millimeters per half, that depth is very close, is right alongside Duo territory. And this is what is making me excited, is that even though these panels are thinner, that when you close it at the hinge, it's delivering a better sort of bend to the screen. So it's not as sharply defined on the screen hinge so that you don't end up with as much of a crease running through your screen. And they kind of do these like close-ups. So they've got this one thing, and they're so much more honest about this than Samsung has been with the Z Fold. It is incredibly difficult to shoot footage of the Z Fold where the crease isn't being shown off immediately in their lighting. But what they're showing here on the Mix Fold 2 is this sort of subtle scoop on a straight line running through their display. This, to me, is an appropriate way to talk about a plastic screen that bends won't be perfectly flat, but what we can hopefully do is minimize the sharp trench that cuts through the display. This, to me, will refract less light, reflect less light, and you shouldn't end up with hard glare, immediate reflections cutting through the middle of your display. And then they just kind of broke down like, hey, this is how we assembled it all, and these are the copper and graphite pads. And then, of course, they've got to show off some of the camera usage, which the Z Fold does very, very well. Being able to use the front display to take selfies from your rear camera, absolutely on point. That is exactly the kind of usage that a foldable should be really good at. And then, of course, this is another branded partnership with Leica. I've got to say, their partnership on the 12S Ultra has been very encouraging, not just for the brute force 1-inch sensor, but just all of the software that goes into making a better camera experience has been formidable on the 12S Ultra. I got this whole video comparing the 12S Ultra against one of my favorite camera smartphone cameras, the X80 Pro. I don't know if anyone saw it. If anyone saw it, I got like a 20-minute breakdown on not just the sensors and the HDR and the processing, but also raw files and computational image stacking and camera operation. So the operation of the camera app, I've got some pretty strong opinions on. So it's pretty interesting stuff. Bringing some of that camera experience to a foldable is very encouraging. That is very exciting, and it helps where I feel like even with Samsung kind of beefing up the camera specs on the Z Fold, that's not really a device built around content creation. And I feel like it's a missed opportunity for what Samsung is sort of known for on things like the Note series, the Ultra series of phones. So I'm very, very interested. Mix Fold 2, let's see, it's a... I was trying to break down like what some of the specs were, but yeah, they're also going for this ecosystem argument where they've got watch and earbuds, and I just like this could be really good. That's what I was looking for. So getting into kind of the pricing, Mix Fold 2 starts from 8,999 yuan. Roughly converted about $1,300 for 12 gigs of RAM and 256 gigs of storage. So we would be sacrificing, I don't believe this has active pen stylus support, but Xiaomi is coming in with some pretty beefy hardware specs. If you're not taking their camera division seriously, then you're certainly missing out. And the starting price is $1,340 to double the storage. So for 512 gigs of storage, you're only adding about $100. And then if you want to go to a 1 terabyte version of the Mix Fold 2, you're looking at $1,780. Again, kind of adjusting for your currency exchange there. I feel like that is a brutally price competitive offering against what Samsung is doing with the Z Fold 4. That's pretty good. and also with faster charging. That was the other one I wanted to just kind of poke at, is a 67 watt fast charging on this. Slightly smaller battery than the first Mix Fold, but like, I don't know, I'm feeling like this is a better overall representation of a folding tablet than what Samsung is doing. It's a less expensive version of a folding tablet than what Samsung is doing. And if we don't acknowledge that this isn't a clone, that this is a next step idea on this concept, then Samsung isn't really going to face the competition that they should, and Samsung won't make better products. We'll just get kind of the same recycled stuff that Samsung likes to put out. Simon says, Hypno, you want to buy this awesome phone? I couldn't pronounce it. I couldn't get my mouth to say yuan. I'm still not saying it. I'm saying it weird. The money, what you spend in China, I'm not doing this well for a North American. That was kind of a bad look. Yeah, not great. Two turbo. Congratulations. You won. You won. You won. Because it's not so hard. The syllables. Anyway, it's just say Juan instead of Yuan. When my whole show fell apart and I couldn't say the word of a major country's currency. All right. So, yeah. TK and I really didn't spend much time talking about Unpacked. I think the nicest things we had to say, he was more interested in the Galaxy Watch, which I think will be interesting to take a look at, a larger battery in a Galaxy Watch. We did spend some time. I had to break down some of their claims. I'm very disappointed in the Galaxy Buds. Samsung is really working this marketing bullet point 24-bit audio. You're going to get the 24-bit. It's audiophile audio at 24-bit quality. And like, that doesn't really tell you anything. It doesn't tell you how good the sonic representation will be. I mean, I feel like ever since they acquired AKG, their audio gear has been good, but I would never put it up against some of my favorite, like, audiophile grade solutions and some of the more exciting elements coming. Like when a company like Beyerdynamic makes true wireless earbuds, I'm more interested in that. But the thing that really made me disappointed was Samsung doubling down on proprietary ecosystem. So the Galaxy Buds are going to support a better communication codec, but it's a proprietary codec. So they're not going to use LDAC. They're not going to use AptX Adaptive. They're not going to use LHDC. If you have your Galaxy Buds and you have your Galaxy phone, they will talk to themselves and you'll get a higher quality data stream going to those earbuds. And I don't want that. I don't want to support that. I don't want to encourage consumers. Well, it's an ecosystem. We need a good ecosystem. And that only sounds like consumer lock-in to me. It doesn't sound like choice. It doesn't sound like competition. It doesn't sound like improving the product. And there's nothing there's nothing preventing Samsung from really improving the quality of their audio playback and utilizing a standard. Oh, but then they'd need to license something from Qualcomm, or they'd need to incorporate a special Bluetooth chip for LDAC. And instead, we could just make our own and charge people more for it and advertise 24-bit sound, which is really more related to the loudness of your music, like the difference between noise floor and peak output, which at peak output for 24-bit audio, you'd blow out the human ears in a matter of seconds anyway. It doesn't really help improve the situation for true wireless. So my official recommendation is and is has always been shop around, look at what products match your needs, and then pick more appropriately rather than just being lazy and saying, well, it's a Samsung phone and I need a Samsung earbud. You've got Snapdragon Sound, you've got AptX Adaptive, you've got LDAC, you've got LHDC. You've got a lot of players out here. I've got Libratones that are pretty good. I've got Beyerdynamic, Soundcore. Do you want the best skull rumblers on the planet? Are you really kind of a bass junkie? Well, then you should probably look at some Soundcore. I've got my One Mores over here for something that's also dual driver and a little bit more nuanced in the sonic representation. I don't know if Jeff is listening at all or if he's in the chat. But Jeff just sent me a DM, El Jefe Reviews, just sent me a DM saying like, oh, by the way, that new Fio is out on Amazon. Like, oh, I need me that new Fio BTR7 so that then I can plug in any awesome earbuds or headphones. Like, you know, my crazy planar magnetic Odyssey earbuds, which are ridiculous. They're $1,300 earbuds. and I can plug them into a Bluetooth puck, and I will get a much better sonic representation of anything that I listen to on that than I would ever get on Galaxy Buds. But I only had to spend $1,300 on the privilege for that. So I'm just saying, choice is actually a good thing. Your audio products should not be stapled to a generation of phone. And if you take care of good audio gear, it really should last you more than one phone. I mean, getting into like three phones would be a good run for classic audio gear. Good headphones, good in-ear monitors. I mean, I've got my original pair of HD25s. Those things are like, I want to say about 15 years old now. And I still would turn to those in a situation where I needed good audio isolation while mixing out in the field. Nothing has changed. They're still amazing DJ-style headphones. But you can't do that with true wireless, and you especially can't do that if the benefits of the product are tied to a specific generation of smartphone launch. So I'm not really much interested in reviewing the Galaxy Buds. I'm increasingly feeling like Samsung needs to be on my list alongside Apple for business practices that I seriously disagree with. Like, there's no good conclusion I can come to on Galaxy Buds. Well, I guess if you want to support a terrible business initiative from Samsung that makes the market more confusing and actually does a disservice to consumers, then spend your money. Go ahead, support that business practice. Why would I make a video in any way highlighting a Samsung product, even to negatively talk about it, to then have Samsung Knights go, well, fine, I will. I'm so edgy. And it's just lame. It's just so lame. McCorkran, I mean, like, they are not my favorite style of tuning, but I've recommended so many people. Michael writes, the Liberty 3 Pro, especially when they're on sale, are about as feature-rich as you can get. And they're bassy. The rumble and punch on those is kind of fantastic. Soundcore is the best bang for buck. The spec-to-price ratio for the Liberty Air 3 Pro by Soundcore beats most other true wireless earbuds, in my opinion. The Airs are also pretty solid. I haven't listened to those recently. So I did get to play around with the... which one? Am I confusing them? Hold on. Soundcore Liberty. Am I making the wrong... Soundcore... No, okay. So, yeah. I am talking about the Liberty 2 Pro versus the Air. Liberty Air 2. Yes, okay, sorry. I was starting to mix the product names because they're so similar. The Liberty 2 Pro are the base junkie solution. The Liberty Air 2, that's a different... That's the one that has the little stock, so it's a different earbud design. Okay, sorry. My brain was melting there, and I was worried, like, oh, man, I might have just been talking total crap here because I got this all mixed up. But to that same token, I've really enjoyed the One More catalog of true wireless earbuds. I'm telling you, man, the Bear Dynamics, I kind of keep coming back to. But on top of that, I also have my trusty pair of Aftershocks for open ear. I still have my One More neckband, but I've been using the One More neckband a little less now that I also have the Ow Sound, which is a dual planar driver Bluetooth neckband, which uses LDAC. I seriously doubt that the Galaxy Buds are in any way, shape, or form going to touch that neckband LDAC Bluetooth solution. So again, it makes me sad because you can get very specific and you can get really into the quality of what you're listening to, or you can save a ton of cash if you just need something simpler. Like if you want Soundpeats, or if you want Earfun, or if you want Edify, or if you want any of these other brands that are doing great work. And that would also be, I think, a better buy than a proprietary Galaxy Bud that only talks to your Galaxy phone. It just seems so lame. I really don't like that. So, yeah, McCorkran, I'm wearing my OnePlus Bullets right now. The old OnePlus neckband. Mine is in the drawer. I haven't pulled it out in a really long time, so I should probably check to see if that battery still works. But that OnePlus neckband was really solid, and I liked the little magnetic earbud clasp. The bullets would go and then just stick right next to each other so that they weren't kind of flopping around. Even my LG neckbands are still in really good shape. But then again, I go through so many different headphone and earbud solutions. A little less wear and tear on those retractable LG cables. But yeah, so some really fun stuff. Like I said, I've been spending a lot of time trying not to just keep picking up my camera phones, the 12S Ultra. I've been using this on so many videos. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, some of the content that I'm looking to produce, even just 2 years ago, I'm like, man, if I really want to do that and I really want to talk about this, I've got to pack up this camera and I've got to pack up a travel tripod. I've got to look at some audio sync and I've got to set this up in a very special place. And increasingly, the way that I would shoot that is now completely been usurped by using smartphones. And from sort of the Galaxy Ultra era on, we've seen a significant increase in the sort of photography and video capabilities of these devices. I was shooting a lot on Sony's. I've moved to shooting a lot on Vivo's. And now it's a pretty good fight if I pick up a Vivo or if I pick up this 12S Ultra. And then if I know I want slow motion, I'll pick up a OnePlus 10 Pro or the Axon. The Axon is actually on my bookshelf behind me. And I'll shoot some 4K 120. It's been tough because that's where I really kind of want to spend my entertainment time. I am having fun playing with those things. But along the way, there have been some really interesting releases. Like, I need to come back and finish up just a little bit more of a longer look on the iQOO. The iQOO 9T. And again, getting just that additional look, a little bit more experience with the 8 Plus Gen 1. So the new SoC from Qualcomm. A little bit more data. Like, what does sort of an entry premium phone look like when it's using this new SoC? But recently, over the last week, I've really been trying to dig into and spend some time with the new Poco. This is the Poco M4. This is a very inexpensive 5G, entry-level 5G device. Dimensity 700. I'm using the 6 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage model, headphone jack, memory card expansion. They have these two lenses on the back, but there's only one consumer accessible camera. The other is like a sort of a time of flight or a depth of field sensor. I think that just helps with their autofocus. But Dimensity 700, decent amount of RAM, decent amount of storage, a nice LCD running at 90 hertz, and a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. I'm consistently impressed with what happens when you pair a less powerful engine with a monster-sized fuel tank. So this is where we should be looking for those family and friends who are, I mean, like, they say that their biggest gripes with their phones are things like battery life. Shopping mid-ranger to entry-level is way better. If you need more runtime, if you're not doing graphics intense gaming, if you're not doing aggressive social media photography, you're going to save so much money and you're going to end up with a phone that definitely runs longer. It runs better for that person's needs. So I'm going to have a video out on this the evening my time so that it's kind of lining up with sort of the next day of notifications and video for the markets that would really get this phone. But I've just been utterly charmed by these kinds of phones. It's the same thing when I've been reviewing Redmi's, when I got to play with like the Neo 6 from iQOO or the Infinix. The Infinix phones have also been really good hardware bang for buck kinds of options. I think the only thing that bothers me about Poco is they just put out so many phones that it's really difficult to kind of keep track of, well, this was an M4 and it was launched in November of 2021, and this was an M4 and it was launched earlier in 2022, and this is also an M4 and it was launched, you know, almost for back to school time in August of 2022. And they're all called M4 with varying suffixes attached, like Pro and 5G. And I think that would be kind of a consumer bummer, is like trying to figure out, well, which phone do I want and which phone do I need? And the names are all similar, but they've got very different sort of parts configurations. They're just all sort of designed to arrive at a certain price point. And that, I think, is the weakness of the Poco brand, that as this experiment in flagship killing has picked up momentum, they're adding more models. You've got, you know, very specific kind of gaming phones. You've got, high-powered flagship-style phones. You've got proper mid-rangers. You've got a couple phones that are just really kind of like built on multimedia and entertainment, and then you've got cheaper, or I shouldn't say cheaper, but less expensive communicator-focused phones. That whole spread is now getting very complicated with multiple releases per tier, tiers built on price points, but then a focus on individual uses, and you need like a whole flowchart just to kind of work out like what Poco is right for you. Do you need shoulder triggers? No? Okay, well, that gets rid of one phone. it's kind of ridiculous trying to map out everything that goes into an entire catalog of phones from this label now. Oh, McCorkran is saying that El Jefe ordered the Zenfone 9. I guess he must have got the global edition because pre-orders are not up yet in the U.S. I really do want to spend some time with the Zenfone 9. I don't know when I'll get to it because I also need to revisit the Xperia Pro I. I want to finish up sort of a longer-term look at the Honor. I just like how much fun I've had picking up an Honor again. This is the Magic 4 Pro. And I didn't want it to get lost in this shuffle of Xiaomi's and Pixels and Vivos. And there's something really special about what this phone is doing that I still feel like it needs its own little kind of refocus. I want to revisit the iQOO 9T so that I can also kind of talk about how well the iQOO 9 Pro has aged. And we can talk about some of the differences. Like, this is a Pro-badged phone, but it's running the 8 Gen 1, and the T-badged phone is running the 8 Plus Gen 1, and what does that mean for some of the differences in performance? And, like, I just revisited the Duos to talk about year over year. A year with the Duo 2, the two-year anniversary of the Duo 1. I don't think we've done a very good job of sort of expressing how those products have changed over time. And it is kind of galling. Like, it's frustrating. It's like, well, it's up to the little channels to go and revisit. If anyone's interested in those videos, they can watch that garbage on smaller YouTube. These are the stories that kind of help people figure out, like, not only what should I buy, but how do I get the most out of it over time? And if all they have access to or all they think to look for are that, you know, launch week video from a major YouTube channel with millions of subscribers, it's a tiny fraction of the conversation. It's really frustrating because, like, you pick up any one of these and I don't have a phone sitting in front of me that I would say is like mediocre. What I would say is I've got a number of phones sitting in front of me that I would narrowly recommend, but for the person I would recommend that phone, man, that phone is going to rock their socks. So it's tricky. It's tricky. Yeah, Zell Knight, the Zenfone would have been my next phone, but it doesn't work on carriers like Verizon. And even, like, I want to pick up a third line, and I want it to be on Visible. Like, I'd like to see what the Visible experience is like, but I can't use anything on Visible. Like, any phone that I would want to pop on Visible, even when it's a Verizon-branded unit, can't use it. It's so frustrating. It really is silly. And we're going to see increasing that kind of lock-in. Like, AT&T is doing that with their 5G. It's such a bummer that you know, you can't really shop around like we could on LTE. We didn't know how good we had it on 4G. Well, I love it. McCorkran is saying the big YouTube channels act like used or older phones aren't even an option for people. They will on less popular mid-rangers. Why would you buy this $400 Moto when you could buy last year's Galaxy S21 instead? They love shopping older phones when they can turn a current newer phone into a loser. Why would you buy this purpose-built mid-ranger with excellent battery life that is going to fit all of your needs when you could buy last year's iPhone 12 and get miserable battery life on 5G? They'll play that game all day long. I started moving around in the chat. Now I've lost my place. Lots of conversations about earbuds. You guys want to chat audio? Because, like, the audio stuff is kind of rocking my socks right now. BTR7, I need so bad. And it, like, while we're here on stream and wrapping up kind of the last 20 minutes here, let me see where we're at on Amazon. Jeff said it was on Amazon. So Fio BTR7. I see BTR5. Oh, I see BTR5 and the 2021 edition of the BTR5. BTR3K. I'm not seeing BTR7. So let me go out to the FIO website. I'll actually screen share this too. So anyone listening to the audio edition of this podcast, you're getting a miserable experience of me Googling things live on stream. BTR7, portable Bluetooth amplifier. Color IPS display, high performance Saber DAC, THX AAA dual rated amps. Oh, I want that so bad. Dual THX AAA rated amps. Oh, that's so tasty. Wired and wireless charging support. 3.5 and 4.4 millimeter cabled outputs, a specific dongle mode, the new Qualcomm QCC5124 Bluetooth chip. Ah, it's so pretty. Yeah, those dual amps I want so bad. The THX rated amps have been absolutely stunning. You look at, like, not just the THX Onyx, but also the Helm Bolt. And I forget what else. The Helm had a portable amp. I can't remember what it was called, but it was also a THX rated amp. And that thing was a monster. So, scrolling down, there's the IPS display. Three levels of independent hi-fi audio architecture for great performance. So you've got sort of direct playback per amp to per ear, or depending on if you're going with a balanced or an unbalanced output, it changes up the dynamics of how the two amps work in conjunction. Oh, that's so pretty. Bold. I wanted to see. Yes, so here we go. Supported codecs, AptX Adaptive, AptX HD, LDAC, and AAC and SBC support. So basically the best all-in-one player. The BTR5 is very solid, but I have the older edition BTR5, which doesn't support AptX Adaptive. Being able to swap that out so you can go either LDAC or AptX Adaptive would be pretty sweet. And it is just cute when you see this little puck. It's got wired and wireless charging. So you can charge it on your wireless phone pad. Isn't that cute? One-click dongle mode. There is a companion app for OTA upgrades, although I don't know that I've gotten a ton of software support on other FIOs. I have the Q3 and the BTR5, but I really want something like this. And then to hook it up and really drive my Odysseys, both my Odyssey cans and my Odyssey earbuds. So yeah, BTR7. This is high on my list of Juan needs it. He's doing grabby hands at the camera. Oh man, I want that. I want it. Want it. Want it. Want it. I want it. In a world of no more quad DAC through LG phones, like, this is where we've got to turn to, and at least, like, the ability to easily pop, you know, go one cable from like a phone or a tablet, plug into a laptop, plug into a desktop, and travel with that high quality audio experience. Massive DAC, enormous amps, just beautiful, beautiful signal clarity. And it's great because like for someone like me, I don't listen loud, but the ability to like drive thirstier headphones, earbuds, thirstier cans, and hear the clarity and the color and be able to turn the audio down with a better signal to noise ratio is always appreciated. So yeah, it's pretty brutal. I love it. I really love it. Sorry, I'm catching up on the chat right now. Sure beats the days where people wore that Bluetooth earpiece on one ear like Saul Goodman. Where were we? Oh, Marie and I were out at that outdoor restaurant. I shared some of the photos from that on even on Instagram. And someone like came walking by us and just like he was doing the business on his one ear Bluetooth headset with the microphone attachment that swung out in front of his mouth. So few of those. You don't see those at all anymore. And I just thought it was hilarious. Like, I am a businessman with my business Bluetooth earpiece, and I am doing the business. It's so funny. Twin folk. Hey, don't buy the Pixel 6a. Buy Galaxy A53. It has 120 hertz. And worse, everything else. So silly. Mommy kind of saying that it's $200 on Amazon. I can't find it. I'm trying to see, like, there's usually a link to shop it. Where is that? Buy now. Yeah, so the official page on Fio is still taking me to AliExpress. And sorry, this item is no longer available. Come on, Fio. I am trying to direct people to your website so that they can give you money to buy your products. And like when I click on the buy now link on the Fio website, it takes me to this page, AliExpress. Sorry, this item is no longer available. And you're like, this item just started shipping. It just released. This is hilariously bad. I can't spell Amazon. Amazon. Oh, Jesus. All right. Let me try Theo BTR7. It's one of the first that shows up. Maybe if we just say just Prime. Oh, yep, there it is. I had to chew through all of the resellers. Ah, there it is. BTR7 B Type C. So you get the Type C cable or the Lightning connector cable. $200. And this will be mine. Oh, yes, this will be mine. Wow. Okay. So yeah, it's shipping according to Amazon. Good. Thank you, MommyCon, for pointing me back towards that. DTNL, I have the older BTR5 and a Sony phone. LDAC is up my street. I'll probably sit out the BTR7 this year. My BTR5 old gen is still working fine. And especially if you're basically just kicking it on LDAC, you're doing great. I'm really anxious to see what they can do for, because the BTR5 is a phenomenal performer, but when you go wireless, it is a step shy of like a good quad DAC for things like noise floor, distortion, signal to noise ratio. And I kind of want to see, can you get me within spitting distance of that kind of frequency response? Like I want to know that the product is properly representing frequencies of sound that dogs can't hear in the playback of my 24-bit 192 kilohertz, you know, FLAC files. And at the same time, minimizing distortion and minimizing noise. And those amps to me represent one of the biggest upgrades we've seen in something that's going to be a small puck, a small portable music playing device. If you don't have that same kind of fetish for like examining the acoustic properties of extreme audio players, then the BTR5 is ridiculous overkill for the vast majority of people's needs, and it's exquisite. It's really, really good. My wife is on a BTR3, right? So covering the basics is not what we're talking about with BTR3 and up. Like, you can spend way less and cover the basics. Oh, see, maybe that was it. McCorkran says I couldn't find it yesterday, but I couldn't find it today, but it was there yesterday, so maybe it was temporarily out of stock. And yeah, I mean, again, they're saying there's only 18 left. Order soon. DTNL. So Zeos review paired with the Asian audiophile market must have overwhelmed them. We knew there weren't a ton of them. But even when I reached out to the person that I contact for FIO PR, it was like, yeah, I don't even know when these are going to ship in the United States. And they're like, you got to keep me informed. He hasn't gotten back to me. So now I need to go and send him an angry email. Like, I told you to tell me when I could buy it. What the heck? see what he says. Yeah. So again, and also talking about Amazon, it's weird. For some reason, it's not showing up when I search on the Amazon app, but it shows up on the browser. TK Bay just commented BH. Is the FIO on B&H? BH photo and FIO BTR7. Oh, it is. I might give my money to B&H. I've been shopping some camera equipment and recently just had to source some new memory cards. And it was not fun shopping for memory cards on Amazon because I was looking for specific models of the Extreme, not the Extreme Pro. I'm shooting 4K on these Panasonics. And shooting 4K, I am right up to the memory buffer on the older, the ones that are marked 150 megabytes per second. The write speed is way slower than the read speed. And I'm right up at that limit where 4K 60, that's 150 megabit 4K video file. And it can be a bit of a challenge to save to these memory cards. So there is a new flavor of the Extreme. It's a little bit cheaper. And you can get some 256 gig cards for surprisingly little money, but they've significantly increased the write speeds. I was trying to find those. I can't tell you how miserable it was putting in the SanDisk part number on Amazon and just getting a sea of search results that had nothing to do with what I was trying to order. And I did the same thing. I put in the part number on B&H. The exact card that I was looking for popped up. I clicked 2. I pushed order, and I was done. This podcast not brought to you by B&H Photo and Video Supply. But if you're looking to actually spend money and shop and get better results with a more narrowly cultivated catalog of equipment, support the smaller retailers. Do business with a company doing the better job of sourcing parts and where you'll be less likely to get scammed because they're just operating their own warehouse and it's not a sea of fulfillment through Amazon Marketplace style shenanigans. As I tell you about this on Twitch, which is owned by Amazon. watch me get like another cryptic Amazon affiliate. We're investigating your Amazon affiliate account. That's happened a couple times on previous episodes of this podcast.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
To Turbo, are there any SD Express cards available yet, or any devices to use the standard? SD Express. I don't know. I'm going to be way behind. I'm still using Panasonic G9s with just dual SD card, regular SD card slots. I don't know if anyone... Are Sony's? Like, TK is more up to date, on Sony camera hardware, but I thought they were using CF Express. I don't know if anyone is using SD Express properly yet. DTNL, not brought to you by B&H yet. I actually do have a B&H affiliate account, but like my affiliate links rarely get clicked on. Like I don't make any money on Amazon affiliates, but like my B&H affiliate links are clicked on even less frequently than my Amazon affiliate links. So I kind of stopped dual sourcing. You know, it's just confusing when you've got like four different affiliate links. Where do you want to shop for this product? Do you want to buy it through B&H? Here is the same link for the same product. Gormlord, cut to black, suddenly. My podcast ends like The Sopranos because I criticized the shopping experience on Amazon. Twin Folk. Yeah. I'm increasingly, when it comes to specific parts, like, I want to have this thing. I do not want something similar to this thing. I want this thing, and I want to know it's being sourced by someone who's operating their own warehouse. I've had problems with Amazon. Like, I needed just a different Bluetooth adapter for my desktop, and it took me three tries to get the right thing. I was ordering the right thing, but they weren't shipping the right thing. And if I had been able to get that exact part from B&H, I would have just gotten it through B&H. But Twin Folk writes, I buy all my tech on B&H now. I don't shop at Best Buy anymore. I had a horrible experience at Best Buy a couple weeks back, and I will never shop Best Buy again. I sometimes do shop Amazon, though. Again, it's not like I'm saying we've completely dropped Amazon. I'm just trying to spread the wealth where it's appropriate, right? B&H has a very specific catalog of hardware. So I'm not going to B&H to shop a blender. But camera equipment, audio equipment, memory cards, and even more, like some of these other more esoteric smartphone accessories. Yeah, B&H is my jam. That's definitely the gig. So I think we can go ahead and start wrapping this up. Hopefully your Pixel 6s are also going to be getting Android 13. I want to see, like, who said Android 13 Pixel 6? I just want to see. Wow, Android 13 is now available for Google Pixel phones. Up an hour ago on Android Police, is out of beta a month earlier than we anticipated. Droid Life. Android 13 will stop rollbacks to Android 12. Buyer beware. Okay. That's a very specific kind of FUD. Oh no, your phone is updated and it cannot be rolled back to Android 12. You have been warned. Cool. Cool, cool. Cool. So I'm going to keep spamming the system update panel on my Pixel 6. Because I haven't been running the betas. I am running the beta, Android 13 beta, on my Pixel 6a. I gotta say, man, the Pixel 6a on Android 13 beta kind of running smoother than Android 12L on my Pixel 6 Pro. So I've been very anxious to update my Pixel 6 Pro, but it's I've been trying to keep my Pixel 6 more of a stock experience. It's not the one that I want to test on. I want it to be the more reliable option. 6A, kind of better though. So, you know, all these people that were doom and gloom on the Pixel 6A. And you know, actually, that's the point I want to wrap us up on, as I've got 2 minutes here before I'm going to go ahead and cap this podcast. Has anyone seen issues with the 6A fingerprint sensor? We were making all this noise about it, right? 2 weeks before, well, I guess not quite 2 weeks, but a week or so before people really got their phone shipped to them in the middle of the pre-order, I had an army of Indian viewers complaining about how all of the Pixel 6As were basically broken and this was a systemic issue. And one person showed that you could unlock it with any fingerprint. And a few other people were able to demonstrate something kind of similar, even though they never showed us the setup process for how they, you know, sort of scanned and recognized their fingerprints, registered their fingerprints. And now the phone is out to consumers, right? Like, hundreds of thousands of these things have shipped to real people. And I just would feel like if there was a substantial and tangible security risk on the Pixel 6a, now that it's been out to more people, wouldn't we see that uptick in all the folks that are demonstrating the problems with their phone, right? Like, that to me would make sense. With more examples of the problem out in the wild, we should hear more reports of that problem manifesting. Especially now that it's on up-to-date or more current security patches, a current Google Play system patch, and all of the individual components through Google Play have been updated. Now would be the time that we would hear more. It almost seems to me like heavily criticizing a Pixel 6a on pre-release software weeks before it launches to consumers in an unfinished state was sort of an unfair way to talk about that phone. I'm just spitballing here, but maybe reviewing a pre-release phone isn't fair to that phone because that's not how consumers will really use that phone, right? You're using the phone in an unfinished state that consumers won't experience. And I know people will say, well, you've got to review what the company sends you. But we don't review iPhones in an unfinished state. And John Redinger was blacklisted by Apple for reviewing the iPhone XR with some software bugs early in the iPhone's life. That's interesting. It's almost like if you criticize Apple, you'll make less money because you'll get less access to Apple products and Apple events. So it's almost like you've got this economic leverage against you having the same kind of early criticisms of an iPhone that you would have for a Pixel. And you know, while I was at Pocket Now, we had no reviewer access for review devices at Samsung because Samsung had sort of blacklisted Pocket Now, and we weren't able to do that too. And I know from going hands-on on early Samsung phones, I mean, I should say going early hands-on with Samsung phones pre-release, they're some of the buggiest devices that you can buy, right? Right at that initial launch point, what do we see after a Samsung launches but multiple months of dual OTAs to fix all the bugs and to patch all the issues and to get the device running better? We know that like the first 3 months, we're going to see like maybe two OTAs a month from Samsung to try and get that thing up and running better. So it's just interesting that we don't see reviewers saying, oh, I'm so concerned about these bugs on my Samsung that I've been using 2 weeks before you could buy it. Oh, I don't think you should buy this phone. But you see the same sort of, you know, sort of breathing through your teeth face on Pixels. And now that the Pixel's out in the wild, I haven't heard anything about systemic issues with the phone. The only thing I keep getting are people are still on my comments in that video, my cranky rant on the Pixel 6a. I heard it had terrible fingerprint sensors. There's a serious issue with the fingerprint sensor. Someone else said that another YouTuber made a video in response to a larger channel's look at the fingerprint sensor. I don't see it. I think the doom and gloom, the sky is falling. I think more people would be making noise if their phone was not secure. Seems like something that folks have been kind of caring about recently, and I'm not hearing about it at all. I don't know. It could just be me. Maybe I'm just not tuned in to this tech conversation, trying to listen to people who really own the phone and bought it themselves. Only seems to be a serious concerning issue with a handful of YouTubers. So yeah, not a great look. Zell Knight. Google cannot seem to update their phones at all. The August update doesn't exist on Pixel 6s. I did poke fun at them, though, because I did get the security patch for August on my Duo. Like, Duo 1 beat my Pixel 6 to the August security patch. So I do that to poke fun at people that act like it's some great victory of a Samsung getting an up-to-date security patch. They're like, yeah, that really should just be sort of expected. It's refreshing, sure, but that's not a purchasing decision kind of data point. See, my Samsung beat yours to getting a bug fix. Cool. Twin Folk Tech is saying, I've had zero issues on the 6A, fingerprint included. As a matter of fact, I've never had any bugs on any of the Pixel 6 series phones. My only big has been that my weather widget didn't display the weather once. So I have some graphical and some UI issues on Android 12, and they actually have popped up. For example, if you're typing in Discord, it's not every time, but if you close out of Discord while the keyboard is still up, I've now had this on three different phones. On the OnePlus 10 Pro, the Xiaomi 12S Ultra, and it's most common on my Pixel 6 Pro, you go to your home screen and the keyboard stays up. And you can't back button out of it. If you're using Gboard, you can do the little caret, the little button at the bottom to drop the keyboard. But it's a moment where, like, the keyboard gets stuck and you can't get out of the keyboard even though you're at your home screen. So I've had some issues. Like, I feel like that's a fair bug. Is that a don't buy the phone because I found a software bug kind of situation? No. And in terms of graphical UI, little sticky gremlins like that, every single phone on the market today is going to have their flavor of an issue like that. So pretending that, like, a Samsung is in any way better than a Pixel because of stuff like, oh no, sometimes when I multitask, it doesn't scroll this the way that I think it should. Or the people who flipped out on the OnePlus 10, oh no, now when I clear all apps, it brings back the app that I was currently in. And you're like, that's not a bug. That's how Chinese phones work. If you go into multitasking and clear out all apps, for some reason, in China, they want you to go back to the app that you're using. I think from an engineer standpoint, that makes sense because you're clearing out the apps in the background if you're having an issue with the app that you're using. Okay, I guess I kind of get that, but it's by design. And I had forum posts of people on OnePlus going, they broke multitasking. They broke close all. They broke, this is so broken. And you're like, no, that's a feature. It's not a bug. All you had to do was pay attention to anyone else around you for a minute, and you would have seen, not a bug. We talk about practice. Not a bug, not a bug, not a bug as a feature. We talk about features. Oh, yeah. So, like, I'm sorry, I don't know. AM is your name now. The excusing of the hilariously crap autofocus on the two previous Ultras was embarrassing. Maybe Samsung can fix it. Maybe a software update. Never buy phones for what they might be able to do, but only buy Samsung because maybe they'll fix their problems with software updates. But on other phones, only buy it for what it can do pre-release, 2 weeks before official software is released, because that's when we reviewed the phone, and never buy it for what it might be able to do. But Samsung, only buy Samsung because eventually maybe they'll fix the issues with their phones in software patches. But don't double think that too hard or your brain will crimp. I mean, Farhan, it's totally possible. Farhan writes, there could be possibility of some people getting defective units. Sure. Do we think that's a systemic issue? No. A couple defective units should be expected in any batch of phones. A reasonable commentary on that is to say, we might have just a problem with hardware on ours. We need to see if wiping this phone out and updating the security patches is going to be the issue. Consumers shouldn't have to do that. Nuke their phone, install a security patch, reset up their phone. But that's the reality of using a modern pocket computer these days. The reasonable reaction is to say, we're going to keep an eye on it. The salacious YouTube hot take trying to make the phone sound like it is an insurmountable problem that everybody's facing and you should be very concerned about it, which that's just FUD. That's literally just profiting off of YouTube's algorithm for outrage traffic. It's not reasonable commentary. Because if you had that as reasonable commentary, you should have hit two whole generations of Samsung phones harder. From the Galaxy S10 through the Note 10, S20, and Note 20, Samsung had the worst run of really dodgy fingerprint sensors. Two whole years, two whole generations of four major product releases, and you would still have issues. Like, we can kind of circumvent the fingerprint sensor by putting a piece of plastic over the sensor when we go to scan the phone. And you could unlock the phone that way. The only thing that really fixed it for Samsung was getting a totally different new fingerprint sensor in the S21. There was no full software patch that completely fixed the bad hardware on two whole years of premium tier Samsungs. So where was the comparative outrage? Because I tell you, millions more people were affected by S10 through Note 20 than will be affected with a handful of defective units on a Pixel 6a. So again, our outrage meter is improperly calibrated for the size and the impact of a potential issue. And if, let's say, there were systemic issues with the Pixel 6a's design, exactly now would be when we would hear more about it. So right now, I have to assume that the QA on the Pixel 6a is actually doing pretty good. If a handful of pre-release reviewers got actually defective units, that doesn't seem to be manifesting to the same percentage in real-world sales, consumers actually putting their money on retail units. Yeah, Ron Guido, Pixel 6 Pro, 650, no trade-in on Amazon. And someone was saying that, like, Targets got incorrect stock. So people are rolling up to Target. You won't find it online, but people were showing, like, if you go to a Target and they've got, like, their little phone kiosk, if you kind of poke around, some Targets weren't really supposed to get Pixel 6 or Pixel 6 Pro retail units. And the few that did, that weren't supposed to get them, they're not sending them back. They're just putting them on that ultra clearance. So you might want to go and see, like, if this is something that happens at your local Target, it's basically going to be done in a day. Like, it's probably already done if there were any. But roll up to your Target, go check out the little electronic section. They were saying, like, just to get rid of them, they were yellow tagging them at 70% off. So a few people were able to score Pixel 6 Pros, I think, $270? So $270 because of an inventory mismanagement issue at Target. But even then, $650 for a Pixel 6 Pro. What, like, the 256 gig version is like $799. That ain't bad. Like, I know we're supposed to be really anxious about getting the latest and greatest, and the Pixel 7 is right around the corner. I doubt Google's going to do anything to the main camera sensor. I doubt Google's going to change the telephoto. Google doesn't like to tweak and experiment with camera sensors. They've stuck with the same camera sensor for, what was it, the Pixel 3 all the way to the Pixel 6a. That's been their main camera sensor. They don't like to mess with it. So I imagine if anything changes on the Pixel 7, we might get a slightly better ultra-wide, but then it's really just getting the Tensor 2. And Tensor 1 is running pretty good now. the updates, the polish, the improvement, performance, this is a screamer SoC that is very capable, especially in sort of a couple handful of like easier content creation sorts of tasks. Like, you're not suffering compute power on a Tensor. It's a highly performant chip. So now might not be a bad time to try and score a deal on a Pixel 6 Pro. I'm trying to catch up on the chat here, and I said I was going to end the podcast like 12 minutes ago. Twin Folk Tech, the ultrasonic fingerprint sensor never worked for me on the S22 with a screen protector. I'm trying to think. So my ultrasonics, the ones that I really like, are the Vivos. So the X80 Pro and the IQ 9 Pro have that enormous Qualcomm Max. The factory applied plastic screen protectors have been working great. So those as ultrasonics have been really good. The Honor also has a plastic factory applied ultrasonic fingerprint sensor, and it's a little closer to the Samsung size. And that's, yeah, that it's really good. I would like the Honor more if the IQs didn't exist. But when I spent time, you know, I'd have to ask Barry. I don't know if Barry's still in the chat. When I borrowed your Note 22, I don't know if he threw on a white stone dome. So I think if you were going with a third-party screen protector, especially since Samsung is too cheap to put on a factory-applied screen protector. See, that's what annoys me. We've got an ultrasonic fingerprint sensor here. It's going to work best with a screen protector sort of verified by the company that made the phone and has to back up the security claims. And then you get a Samsung and you're like, you get nothing. Here's the phone. Go put on your own screen protector, and you've got to kind of guess like what screen protector is really going to work. So I think there was a white stone dome, one of those like chemical gel, you put it on, it cures, and it kind of, it's sort of an adhesive quality to glass on the screen. And I want to say that worked well. Like, I think those have been doing pretty good. But again, it's a bummer because Samsung should be ahead of that. There should be an official Samsung screen protector for their ultrasonic fingerprint sensor phones because it matters. It matters how you scan and register your fingerprints on these different types of technologies. And why I still feel like the most practical way to do this well is with the power button. Put the fingerprint sensor in the power button. I wish I had. So I've got the 12S Ultra. This, I mean, like, importing this was a $1,300 phone, and it has an optical in-display fingerprint sensor. Here, I've got an entry level. I don't even know what the regional pricing is for the Poco. This M4 is a really inexpensive phone. I desperately wish my $1,300 Xiaomi had the same power button fingerprint sensor as my, like, $300-ish Poco M4. It's that much better. And especially for like how you pull the phone out of your pocket, it's unlocked and ready to go. You don't have to wait for the double scan on the Xiaomi. Xiaomi makes the best power button fingerprint sensors, and their most expensive phone doesn't have it. That makes me really sad. So yeah, let's go ahead and wrap that up. Folks, we've got a lot of stuff coming to the channel. I've got some Sony to revisit. I've got the Poco. I've got a massive backup, a portable battery and charging solution. I'm missing something. I know I'm supposed to be making another video on another product, and some earbud reviews that I'm way behind on. And all of it, just we're going to be really, really fun, really cool stuff. We're going to geek out pretty hard. So, folks, stay tuned. Catch this channel. Me and TK will be streaming on Thursday. We've got Kimmy Gadget Goddess on Tuesday, Easy Computer Solutions on Wednesday, Ike Talks Tech on Thursday. Holla at your boy. LaShawn is going to be doing his roundup of absurdity and buffoonery on Friday. TK on Saturday. El Jefe Reviews on Sunday. There's so much tech
to kind of sort through, and so many amazing creators that are making great stuff. But be on the lookout. I'm going to be putting up a doorbell review on reviews.org. Might also do a little send-off. Today is the last episode, the series finale of Better Call Saul. So I might even be doing a little media reviewing. That might end up being a short, but it's a show that I've absolutely loved. So lots of fun stuff. Lots of really, really, really cool stuff to catch. And again, just thank you so much. People in here were subscribing. A major shout out and a thank you again to Andrew for also gifting a couple of subscriptions out to people in the chat. And it really does. It really is. It helps kind of keep production rolling, keeping this the home for the podcast instead of just defaulting everything to YouTube, and kind of keeping our chat a little bit more focused with people that we know are already amazing tech neighbors. So have a great week. I want you to do awesome. I want you to be awesome. And with everything that's kind of going crazy in the world right now, I also just really, to echo it at the end of every podcast, to take care of yourselves. Give yourself the mental health breaks. Give yourself the physical health attention. Take care of yourselves so that you can take care of the others around you. Because everyone right now could use a hand. And it's okay to also ask if you need a hand. Don't try and go it alone. And then also be receptive when someone's reaching out. So catch you back here next week. Another episode, Monday Morning Tech Chat Show. Next week is our pajama podcast. No. Next week is a regular show. Week following will be pajama podcast. So news block, gadget block. We're going to be talking about links and stuff next week. I'll catch you all for another episode of the SDG QA on the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show. Had that backwards. Take care. Be well. I love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.